Giving up.
Kalevaram.
The material body. Dirte.
In the holy place.
Gangayam.
On the bank of the Ganges.
Darshanadanu.
After seeing.
Sadhyaha.
Immediately.
Sarupam.
His original spiritual form.
Jagrahe.
He assumed.
Bhagavat Parshvavartinam.
Which is fit for an associate of the Lord. Translation. Upon seeing the Vishnu Dutas, Jamil gave up his material body at Haridwar on the bank of the Ganges. He regained his original spiritual body, which was a body appropriate for an associate of the Lord. So you can repeat. Upon seeing the Vishnu Dutas, Jamil gave up his material body at Haridwar on the bank of the Ganges. He regained his original spiritual body,
which was a body appropriate
for an associate of the Lord. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, text 9, Janma karma chame divyam yavim yo veti tatvata chaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sojuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not upon leaving the body take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. The result of perfection in Krishna consciousness is that after giving up one's material body, one is immediately transferred to the spiritual world in one's original spiritual body to become an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some devotees go to Vaikuntha Loka and others go to Goloka Vrindavan to become associates of Krishna. So, it Akalevaram Tirte Gangayam Darshanadanu Sadyasadupam Jagrahe Bhagavat Parashva Vartinam. So, Om Ganata Mirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Jamil's spiritual activities were enacted in a holy place. A holy place is called a tirtha. And the word tirtha is very interesting. It means a crossing place. Or as we say in modern science fiction nomenclature, a portal. Anyone here has watched science fiction films, you know what a portal is. That when you open up a portal, you can go from... Oh, there's our universal mother. The divine mother. So... Actually, that's what some bogus man said about his wife. He called his wife the Divine Mother. Anyway, so a portal is some scientific or pseudo-scientific or whatever nomenclature for something that you can enter. It's like a dark hole in space or something like that. That you can enter and go into some other dimension or go to other some other universe, and somehow or other you can transcend what's called the speed of light. The speed of light is 186,000 miles a second, roughly. I haven't measured it lately, but that's what I was told. And generally, according to Einstein, you can't travel faster than the speed of light, isn't it? It's impossible. Although there are some strange things that happen that even Einstein was talking about. It was like strange action even at a distance, which seems to overcome the limitations of the speed of light. So anyway, so speed of light is sort of a limitation, and faster than speed of light is the speed of the mind. Just like if you think of something and you're actually concentrating on that thing, that's where you are in the mind. And even if you travel at the speed of the mind, which I haven't really calculated as far as miles per second, even if you travel at the speed of the mind, you can't reach the end of the universe. And even if you could reach the end of the universe, you can't pierce through the coverings of the universe, each of which, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, are 10 times bigger than the other covering, the other coverings preceding them. So, especially the false ego is the hardest covering to go through. False ego means I and mine. So, therefore you need a portal. Anyone who's watched Star Trek or Star Wars or any of these things knows about portals. Anyway, so you need a portal. And Tirtha is actually a portal by which you can actually go someplace, transcending this material world. It's a crossing, you know, like I said, the word Tirtha means a crossing place. Also, this other word used here is very interesting by Srila Prabhupada in the translation. Haridwar. Sometimes people pronounce it Haridwar. You see in India, you say, I'm going to Haridwar, sometimes they say, well, you mean Haridwar. Because Haridwar is actually short for Haridwar. Dwar means like gate or sorry. It means gate or doorway. So the same thing. Portal is also indicated by that. And the doorway to Hari. Hari here referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Haridwar basically means the portal by which you can enter and go back to the spiritual world. And there's many portals like that there in India. Of course, there's Jagannath Puri. Actually, Jagannath Puri technically is not called a dham, it's called a kshetra. There's actually a technical definition or a difference between dham and kshetra. Dham means abode, kshetra means a place, but anyway, we're not going to make that difference. So there's Jagannath Puri, kshetra, and there's Vrindavan dham, Mathura dham, anywhere where the Lord enacted his pastimes is called a dham. Or a tirtha, which is interesting, not only on the bank of the Ganges, but on the bank of the Yamuna. If you can actually find the Yamuna nowadays, since it's been blocked up above Delhi, so you have to go to Yamunotri or someplace like that to get to the Yamuna. So any of these holy places, then they're ideal places to leave the body at. And there's also holy places that are what we call temporary holy places that are manifested when there is a temple of Vishnu somewhere. When there is a temple of Vishnu, that temple also becomes, we say, Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is the negative definition of spiritual location. The negative definition means you're defining it by what it's not. Not that negative means bad. In this case, negative means what it's not. So what it's not is not Kuntha or anxiety. In the material world, there's Kuntha, plenty of Kuntha. In the spiritual world, there's spiritual Kuntha. So technically speaking, even Vaikuntha may not be an appropriate name for the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world, you find the devotees who are in anxiety have to please Krishna. But it's not material anxiety. Anyway. So therefore, one should definitely reside in a holy place. That is, either in a temple of the Lord, or one should make one's home a temple of the Lord. Now, if one's home is not a temple of the Lord, so Vayasa Tirtha, then it becomes a place of pilgrimage for crows. And actually, the reason crows are used in this particular regard is that crows in India are quite big, and they hang around the garbage quite a bit. When we were in Jagannath Puri one time, we had the benefit of staying right next to the garbage heap. Not that I was slumming it at that particular point, but the hotel we were staying in was right next to the garbage. And we got a chance to take darshan of all these big, big crows, as big as Jatayu practically. And actually, it was frightening. I was afraid one of them was going to carry me off. They were so big. So anyway, so the crows hang around the garbage. Even here in America, when you have a place where they dump all the garbage, you see the crows and birds are hanging around there. So the crows go for the dirty things, and the swans are the opposite type of bird. And they actually go for the nectar. They're able to separate nectar from a dirty place. So where the glories of the Lord are not chanted, Savayasa Tirtha, it's described that it becomes a tirtha. And again, the word is used, tirtha, like a crossing place or portal, which is interesting because this portal helps you cross to the lower regions of the universe. There's actually portals, there's tirthas. That's interesting, a place of pilgrimage for crows, or tirtha for crows, the Vyasa Tirtha. So that there's actually places where you can actually cross to hell too. You know, hellish tirthas. So it's like if you go to a bar, or where there's intoxication being taken, that's actually a tirtha too, technically speaking. For the tirtha to cross down rather than the tirtha, because you can cross down or up. You would say crossing place, it doesn't, you know, bridge, has two directions, backwards and forwards. You can cross the bridge in either direction. So anyway, so we should reside in a portal or a tirtha where the glories of the Lord are being chanted, where the regulated principles are being followed. And in this way, our consciousness can actually be, can cross over. Not only should we wait till the end of this body, but even while we're in this body, we should be thinking of how our consciousness crossing over to the other side. This is called Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means that even while one is in this present body, one can be engaged not only externally in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but internally, one can be not only visualizing, but directly participating in Krishna's pastimes. So you don't have to wait until you leave your body. You can actually, not that you can do it, but you know, advanced devotees can do it. They can close their eyes, meditate, and as we mentioned many times before, we have advanced devotees who are able to bring back ingredients or objects from the spiritual world into this mundane plane. That happened several times with Srinivas Acharya and other great devotees. And not only that, but disciples and gurus were able to engage in the same meditation and enter into the same pastime like Srinivas Acharya and Ramchandra Kaviraj. So this is, you know, it's simply wonderful what a pure devotee can experience. He doesn't have to wait till Hitva Kalevaram. As long as he's living in a tirtha or in a place of pilgrimage, in a tirtha that's dedicated to the Supreme Personality of God. So that's the first point, that we actually have to live in a holy place. That's back to nectar devotion. That's considered one of the most important items, you know, the five most important items in Krishna consciousness, such as, you know, worshiping the deity, chanting the holy name, and living in a holy place. So, in other words, these are essential items. They're not non-essential items. I mean, there's certain non-essential items, since we have some people here from Krishna West. Wearing dhotis is non-essential. So you don't have to do that. You can still go back to Godhead. Why? Because there's no prerequisite mention as far as wearing dhotis to go back to Godhead. Other things too, you know, you can also eat food that's not Vedic, so to speak Vedic, and still go back to Godhead. You can have sauerkraut and still go back to Godhead. You can have mushrooms and still go back to Godhead. You can have, what? But you can't have meat, fish, and eggs and go back to Godhead. Anyway, so there's certain, we have to be able to distinguish the essential items from the non-essential items in Krishna consciousness, because otherwise we become caught up in something called niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means we take all these different rituals, like mudras and things like that, to be essential items. They're not. You know, essential items are the chanting the Lord's holy names, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in a holy place, worshiping Tulsi Devi, and of course chanting the Lord's holy names, Sankirtan. These are all essential things. You have to read the Bhagavatam daily. You have to worship, you should worship Tulsi every day. You should chant the holy names every day. You should, of course, be a vegetarian. But that, these are, you know, those are indirect items. Because simply being a vegetarian is not considered, it's essential, but it's not an essential item because it's a prerequisite to perform the essential items, being a vegetarian. As we mentioned yesterday, quoting from the first chapter, fourth verse of the 10th canto, that if one is not a vegetarian, puman vidajeta vana pashudnat, if one is a killer of animals, then he can never actually approach Krishna or understand Krishna consciousness. So these are essential, but they're not positive items. They're prerequisites for Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so here it's described how Ajamil gave up his material body. So generally, this is the process for going back to Godhead. There are exceptions to this, though. I mean, there are exceptions to giving up your material body to go back to Godhead, and we can think of several notable exceptions in this regard. I mean, you have the story in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There's the story of Gopakumar. And Gopakumar, when he entered into the spiritual airplane to go back to the spiritual world, he found his body transformed into spirit. There was no indication that Gopakumar actually left his body. In other words, became a spiritual body. He had a coward boy body. And then when he entered into Vaikuntha, he had a small coward boy body. Of course, in one sense, that coward boy body was not really appropriate for the Vaikuntha planets. Here we find Ajamil going to the Vaikuntha planets, which basically means he took on a forearm form, like that of Lord Vishnu. And the only thing that distinguishes those forms of the Kushtubamani, like that, and the Bhrigupada. That's how you can tell the difference. Like if you ever see a devotee or someone walking around with four arms, and they don't have a Bhrigupada or a Kushtubamani, then you know it's not Vishnu. If he has that, then you should worship him as Vishnu. So that was appropriate for Ajamil. But in the case of Gopakumar, he basically didn't have a forearm form. He kept his coward boy form. And the residents of the Vaikuntha planets were continually encouraging him to change his form. He said, you can take a form like ours if you like. And he said, no, thank you. I mean, I don't know what I would do if someone offered me a forearm form. I'd probably say I'm attached to this material body. Let me stay here in the material world. But he was attached to his form, which indicated he was attached to a specific relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like every form that a devotee takes or has, let's say, rather than using the word take, because the form is actually originally there, as Prabhupada mentions here in the word-by-word translations, he says, is original spiritual form. And also in the translation itself, it says he regained his original spiritual body. So in other words, that body is there, but you've basically forgotten it or you've lost contact with it. I mean, like when you're sleeping, you've lost contact with your gross body. I mean, last night I had, you know, very interesting dreams. I can't relate them all, but anyway, by the mercy of disciples, I get very interesting dreams sometimes. I don't have to go to the horror movies anymore. But at, you know, in the middle of the night, I woke up and I, you know, just interesting dream, completely an illusion, that some substance was revealed to me that if someone took it, they would give up meat eating. So I was thinking, I was thinking of how to get people to give up meat eating. So I had this illusory dream in the middle of the night that if someone took this particular fruit, they'd never want to eat meat again, and I was just woke up ecstatic in the middle of the night. But now I don't even remember which fruit it was. And so it's just an illusion. So the point is, I mean, I don't think it was real that Krishna was revealing to me how to make everybody in the material world a vegetarian by giving them a certain type of fruit. Of course, the nectar of the holy name. I understand that. But so we forget our gross body when we're sleeping. So what to speak of our sleeping condition right now, our dreaming condition right now, where we forget our spiritual body. So becoming Krishna conscious is described in the Bhagavad Gita, just like when the sun comes up, it reveals everything. And gradually there's a revelation, you know, there's shadows first. After the shadows, you see things in black and white. You don't see things in color. And after that, you begin to see things in color. So it's a gradual process. In the same way, you gradually realize your spiritual body. In fact, in the higher stages of sadhana, you start to have that gradual realization. In the beginning stage of sadhana, sadhana means practice, which is called vaidhi bhakti, you don't have that realization. All you are is following the rules and regulations. In the higher stage of sadhana, you start to have a glimpse of your spiritual body. You're just like a glimpse. It's like a shadow. Huh? Sometimes from a shadow, you can actually tell the form of a living entity. But shadows are sometimes really bewildering. Just like when I was young, I used to shadow puppets. You know what shadow puppets are? No, you don't know what that is. That means you have a light and you make little things with your hand. And then you can make a bird, you can make a duck, you know, you can make a devotee with a sika sticking out in the back. So, but it was just illusory. So in the beginning, we have to be really careful. We begin to have a little glimpse of a shadow and you think, oh, that shadow looks like a gopi, but actually, it's probably the shadow of a cow instead of a gopi. So, in other words, so therefore, in the higher stages of sadhana, we have to approach guru, and we say to the guru, you know, I'm having these little glimpses of something that appears to be a gopi. And the guru will say, what does it look like? What do you think? And the guru said, you know, I don't really think so. You know, you don't have this particular nature. I think you have the nature to be a cow. And then the disciple gets upset, you know, really I wanted something sexy like a gopi. It's like I've had that, people tell me that before initiation, they go, I want a sexy name. And then I say, no, you're just going to get a name of a cow or something. Then they bloop. So, because people are projecting the material understanding. One has to be very careful about this. You project your material understanding into the spiritual realm. Like I've given that example many times before, when I joined the movement, I was, me and all the young boys in the temple, because we were all like 21, we were always talking about the coward boys, so we figured we were all coward boys in the spiritual world. And we might have been, or we may be, but you know, who knows? You know, we might just be dogs, who knows? So we looked at each other and said, yes, we're all coward boys, and we're supposed to follow in the footsteps of Subal and Sridham, and all these other nice coward boys. And we were very happy, but that was simply illusory, because then we weren't even experiencing a shadow. It was just a question of, you know, projection of our material attachments, you know, because we used to hang out with each other. You know, these devotees I joined with, we used to hang out with each other and do all sorts of things like the coward boys would do. We would steal food from gardens and jump into ponds, you know, splash each other. And so that was simply mundane. But as one progresses, you get a glimpse and you approach the guru and the guru can confirm or not confirm. This is mentioned in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's books, of course. The Jiva Dharma talks about this extensively. This is actually an important process. If one is ready. If one is not ready, it just leads to hell because it's the Haja business. So the guru can tell one whether one's ready, and if the guru's not around, you approach another great devotee to ascertain what is it. So anyway, so then when it's confirmed, then you begin to cultivate this. And it takes time. Just like one may think when they're a little baby, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a fireman like I did, or a policeman. Didn't work out too well. I became a Hare Krishna devotee instead of a fireman or a policeman, because these are my role models. In other words, you have role models. That's actually what Raghunuga Bhakti is. You have a role model. There's a particular resident of Vrindavan you want to serve and become like. In the same way, when we were young, we had some role models. I mean, one of the problems now in preaching is that we need more role models. you know, if we want to make devotees, that's really what got me to join the Hare Krishna movement, in spite of all the non-Krishna West stuff I had to come in contact with, like dhotis and shaved heads and waking up early, and, you know, even deities, which are really hard to accept for a Westerner. What really got me was that Prabhupada, he's my role model. I want to be like him. And because I wanted to be like him, therefore I was able to tolerate all these other things that, you know, I had to do, which went completely against my material grain. You know, like I mentioned, you know, many of the things went against my grain, the material grain. And so we don't want to put, when preaching to people in the West, we don't want to put all these impediments in front of people. We want to make it not such a large leap to become Krishna conscious. You know, people basically, nowadays people have to become like Hanuman to make this leap. You know, you have to put on dhotis, you have to dress like this, shave your head, wake up early in the morning. You know, just want to make it an easy step instead of a large leap. So that's the purpose of Krishna West, because we have some Krishna West representatives here, so we have to mention that. So anyway, so what got me to make a large leap was just the role model of Prabhupada. So what I thought is, I want to be like him. I didn't want to be him, or I didn't want to imitate him. Although sometimes you find devotees that imitate Prabhupada, they even try to speak like Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. You know, imitation is not required. Follow in the footsteps. Anusar, anupatar. So one should actually follow in the footsteps of a great devotee and try to be like them in many ways. So that's what Raghunuga Bhakti is. That you actually have a role model. You know, whether it's Subal, Sudam, Lalita, Vishaka, or whatever. And then, you're very attracted to that role model. And that role model, what are they doing? They're serving Krishna, like Prabhupada. You know, I wanted to be like Prabhupada, not because I wanted all the Mahaprasadam, although that may have been part of the motivation. I wanted to be worshipped like a guru. No, because I wanted to be compassionate like Prabhupada, and absorbed in Krishna's service like Prabhupada. And based on that, I mean, that's been my inspiration or source of enthusiasm throughout the years. You should be like that, you know. So that's my sort of Raghunuga Bhakti, to be like Prabhupada. And so when you focus on someone in the spiritual world, because Prabhupada is in the spiritual world, but we're not supposed to guess at his particular rasa or relationship with Krishna, then it's their service attitude that you're concentrating on. And then, based on that service attitude, you begin to identify different, what's called the Ekadasha Bhava, the 11 aspects of your particular personality becomes clearer and clearer, but the service attitude is the essential thing. Not that one takes the 11 aspects first, but the service attitude comes first. Then, the 11 aspects of one's identity become manifest, and then one progresses further, Bhava Bhakti, and finally, Prema Bhakti. Anyway, so we all have this spiritual body, and as far as Gopa Kumara is concerned, he already knew what his spiritual body was because he was born in a very similar body, and that body was transformed into a spiritual body. He didn't have to change his body. There's other examples too. I mean, there's Dhruva Maharaj, who also just mounted on an airplane and went back to Godhead and transformed his body. And then Maharashtra, there's the famous Tukaram. Tukaram, of course, is the great Maharashtrian saint, and who also had kirtans, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Still, this is going on in Maharashtra. And when it came time to go back to Godhead, he didn't leave his body. Couldn't the airplane just, like, landed? It didn't need an airport. Just landed there because it does VTOL. You know what VTOL is? Vertical takeoff and landing. So it's a VTOL. It's like a it's not a quadcopter. So it did, and so it landed, and he got in, and he even said to his wife, "You know, you can come, dear." And she said, "No way, Jose." I want to stay here with my family. So that's another point. If you want to have a spiritual body, you can't have any, like, attachments. The Vedic system is meant for gradually giving up those attachments. And of course, at Jamil, he wasn't ready to realize his spiritual body because he had his attachments. I mean, he was chanting the Lord's holy names inadvertently, Namabash, but he was attached to his son, attached to all these things. So he had to perform at Haridwar, not Haridwar, he had to perform austerities and bhakti to become detached. Because if you have one little attachment, you won't want to get onto that Vaikuntha airplane when it comes. Because you're going to be thinking, I have so many plans. You know, Vaikuntha airplane lands and says, come with us. And you say, no. Just let me stay, you know, 5 minutes longer, you know, a little longer. I have to write my will up for my kids. And, you find actually in the case of Jesus Christ when he was making his disciples, he wouldn't even let them go back and bury their father or something like that. I mean, it's interesting. There was one person he was preaching to who wanted to join him, and he said, I'll join you, I just have to go, you know, bury my father. And he said, let the dead bury the dead. So what that indicates, I mean, it's like metaphorical. Obviously, we're not going to be so heavy with our devotees and saying you can't go to the funeral of your father. But it indicates that if you have one little attachment, I mean, most of the Bible is metaphorical, like Adam and Eve and everything like that. So if you have one little attachment, you have to stay here for that little attachment. So the Vedic system is to gradually give up these attachments. You know, Varnashram is one progresses through the various stages of life. You know, Brahmachari is trained up nicely, pretty detached until he falls in love. And then Grahastha, and then attachment is there, and then there's the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Never ends. Because the children and the grandchildren keep having children. So it keeps... you know, you think it'll come to an end, you know. But it doesn't. It actually increases exponentially. Sometimes you see these pictures of people, you were like 80, 90 years old with several generations, and it's like 500 people surrounding them. So you got more aunts, uncles, and people to visit than you did when you first got married. So the attachment actually increases. Or Prabhupada said to one man who wanted to take sannyas, he said, I'm not attached to this sex life. Prabhupada said, you're attached to the products. Because these are all little yous. In other words, they come out of you, and if something comes out of the thing that comes out of you, and something comes out of the thing that comes out of the thing that comes out of the thing. Nothing, person. So I'm not saying everyone has to take sannyas, but the point is, by chanting the Lord's holy names, one has to act like they're attached in this material world, but be detached. Prabhupada said that's the perfect situation for a householder, too. To act like they're attached to their wife, but be detached. You know, that's really difficult to maintain that particular status. So, you know, how to act like one's attached, but be detached. One has to be attached to Krishna. That's the point. So attached to the holy name, so attached to your spiritual form in the spiritual world. In other words, you have to come to the stage of Raghunatha Bhakti. You really have to realize what your real identity is. Otherwise, you're going to be attached to your false identity. If you simply stay on the stage of Vaidhi, you're not going to be detached. Because you have to have your concept of your real body, at least your concept of your real body, your concept of your real service. That's the only way real attachment comes. So it's not by simply taking sannyas. As Jadvarta says, Ruhuganaita tapasa nayati, not by taking sannyas or being a good grahasa or any of these things, but by taking the dust, bathing in the feet of a great devotee, abhishek, is that taking the, bathing, taking an abhishek. In other words, becoming like a great devotee, which is Raghunatha Bhakti. Raghunatha Bhakti is actually described in this verse by Jadavarta. Huganaita tapasani ati na chaitya nirvapanad grahadva na chandasanaiva janagni suryar vanavahat pada rajobhishekam. He says, without Vina Mahapada, without taking a bath, no one will actually understand things in the dust of the feet of the great devotees. So that's indicating Raghunatha Bhakti in addition to Vaidhi Bhakti too. But only when one comes to understand their eternal spiritual body can one be detached from this material world and be qualified to go back to the spiritual world. On that happy note, I'm sure all of you are detached, right? I hope so. That means not only from the body, but from profit, adoration, distinction, position, control. One of the things I've seen in Indian culture, controlling is a big issue. You know, being a controller, position and everything like that. So one has to be detached from all these things. Okay, all glory, and that happy note, all glories.